You remain standing for the reading of the gospel. It comes to us this morning from Matthew's gospel, the 28th chapter, beginning of the first verse. After the Sabbath, on the first day of the week, while it was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to see the tomb. And suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord, descending from heaven, came and rolled back the stone and sat on it. His appearance was like lightning and his clothing white as snow. For fear of him, the guards shook and became like dead men. But the angel said to the women, "Do not be afraid. I know that you're looking for Jesus who was crucified. He is not here, for he has been raised, as he said. Come see the place where he lay. Then go quickly and tell his disciples, he has been raised from the dead. And indeed he is going ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him. This is my message for you." So they left the tomb quickly with fear and great joy and ran to tell his disciples. Suddenly Jesus met them and said, "Greetings." And they came to him, took hold of his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Do not be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to go to Galilee. There they will see me." While they were going, some of the guard went into the city and told the chief priest everything that had happened. After the priest had assembled with the elders, they devised a plan to give a large sum of money to the soldiers, telling them, "You must say, his disciples came by night and stole him away while we were asleep. If this comes to the governor's ears, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble." So they took the money and did as they were directed. And this story is still told among the Jews to this day. Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain which Jesus had directed them. When they saw him, they worshipped him. But some doubted. And Jesus came and said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything that I've commanded. And remember, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." It's the word of God for the people of God. May be seated. How often do we find ourselves saying things like this? "I can't wait to see you." I mean, it speaks of our sense of excitement and expectation of getting together with the people that we love. You know, I took it for granted growing up in a small town next door to my grandparents, with almost every relative I had in the world living within 5 minutes of me. But now, with a daughter in California, grandchildren in Atlanta, family scattered all over, I find myself saying that every time we're anticipating a visit. "I can't wait to see you." Or what about this one? "I thought I'd never see you again." I mean, it speaks to the relief that we feel in a long-awaited and perhaps a surprise reunion. Or maybe that line itself reveals the heartache we live with when we are apart from the people that we love. Or maybe we say something like, "You are a sight for sore eyes." I mean, sometimes that's kind of a flirtatious saying, but I always think about the prodigal's father when I hear that. That father every day looking down that road, straining his eyes, hoping that one day those eyes sore from that futile look for someone who's not there. Can you imagine the day when those sore eyes caught a glimpse of his son coming up that road? "You are a sight for sore eyes." Or what about, "When can I see you again?" Or, "I'll see you again soon." I mean, sometimes near the end of our time together with somebody that we love, there starts to already to be a heartache for an absence that we're about to experience once again. And we have a desire for some reassurance, some hope that we'll be together again soon. I mean, today technology like FaceTime has spared us some of the heartache of absence. And yet I wonder maybe if seeing each other, even through that kind of media, robs us a little bit of the anticipation we used to feel when we didn't see someone face to face for a long time. But even that, FaceTime or such, is not like seeing the person we love coming up that hallway from the plane in the airport, or walking into the front door of our home, or sitting there and hearing someone in the house excitedly say, "They're here." I mean, undoubtedly one of the most painful, overwhelming experiences in life is the closing of a casket for someone that we love. The thought that you'll never see them again sucks the air out of your lungs, because it feels like there is no more anticipation or hope of seeing you again. I was once a part of an African-American funeral where they had a tradition in this particular denomination that they called the last glimpse. Before the closing of the casket, all of us in the service lined up and made a last walk past the casket. Then everyone was seated, and they closed it. It was one of the most intense emotional environments I had ever experienced. When they carried Jesus' body into that tomb and rolled that stone over the door, the followers of Jesus felt with dread they would never see him again. Even though he had tried to prepare them for this. Remember, he told them beforehand, "Let not your hearts be troubled. Trust in God, trust also in me. In my Father's house there are many mansions, and I'm going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and take you to myself, that where I am, you there you may be also." Or he said later, "I'm going away, and where I'm going now, you cannot come. But it's a good thing that I go away, because the Holy Spirit is coming, and He'll be with you forever." But on that Friday, I'm not sure any of that stuff he said to them really made any difference. All they knew for sure is what we proclaim in that great creed, that he suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, dead, and buried. Matthew tells us that early on Sunday morning, the women went to the tomb. Now, unlike Mark or Luke's gospel, he doesn't say anything about them taking spices for burial or wondering who was going to remove the stone. It suggests they simply were going to the tomb to sit and grieve, to be as close as they could to the last place they saw him. It's why we visit cemeteries, just to sit and grieve. What happens next in Matthew's story is really one of my favorite scenes in the Bible. It says when they arrived, there was a great earthquake, and an angel came down and rolled back the stone and sat on it. I can just see him sitting up there on that stone with his legs crossed, all relaxed, big smile on his face. I keep thinking, one year I'm going to preach an Easter sermon, and I'm going to entitle it, "Go Sit On It." That was next. Then the angel says, "Don't be afraid. I know that you are looking for Jesus. He is not here. He has been raised. Come take a look." But I wonder, when he said that, if maybe bigger than their excitement that he was not there was a feeling of disappointment that they were too late, that they had just missed him. It's sort of how it feels for me on when the kids are here and they're leaving on Sunday, and I get up and head for church early while everyone's still asleep. And I get home after church and the car is gone, and Susan says, "You just missed them." And I know that all there would have been had I been there was watching them drive, maybe one more hug and watching them drive off, and I would have that disappointment and absent longing. But there's something about having just missed them that disappoints you. I bet they felt it that morning when he said, "He's not here." He might as well have said, "You just missed him." Because I'm sure they didn't know exactly what it meant. He's not here. He's been raised. I mean, did that mean he's gone back to heaven and we'll never see him again? Or did it mean he's gone to grab some breakfast and a change of clothes and he'll see you back at the house? I mean, what we do know is this. An empty tomb alone was not going to be enough for them to believe. After all, there were already folks that morning concocting a more logical story than resurrection from the dead. Somebody stole his body. I mean, remember, John says that was even Mary's response when she actually met the risen Jesus outside the tomb, thinking he was the gardener. She says, "If you know where they took his body, please tell me, sir, and I will go and take it away." Well, Jesus knew an empty tomb would not be enough for the faith he needed his disciples to have. They would need to see him again. So the angel says to the women, "Go tell the disciples to go to Galilee, and there you will see me." The Christian faith is based on people's experience of seeing the risen Jesus. Peter writes in his letter, "We were eyewitnesses to his glory." Or Paul writes in Corinthians, "Jesus appeared to Peter and to the apostles and to more than 500 people at one time, and then he appeared to James, Jesus' brother, and last of all, he appeared to me." Matthew says the women left the tomb with fear and great joy. Fear, I think, because it might not be true. Great joy because there was hope again. But he adds this: when the women saw him, they worshiped him. Keep that in mind. They worshiped him. Now, the story doesn't tell us how the disciples felt as they struck out from Jerusalem on that 70-mile journey to Galilee. In fact, I'm a little surprised as I read the story that they went at all, based only on these women's testimony and an empty tomb. I mean, maybe they went with a "I can't wait to see you" kind of expectation. Or maybe they went with a skeptical, guarded heart, afraid to get their hopes up again. But we might as well get out of Jerusalem and get back to our boats and nets in Galilee. But just like the women outside the tomb, it says, when they saw him in Galilee, they worshiped him. Now that's a significant statement because never before in the Gospels does it say they worshiped Jesus. It says they followed him, they loved him, they obeyed him, but now they worship him. What I think that means is seeing is truly believing. It means that everything he said before, they now really believe. And everything they had hoped for in him before, they now really believe. See, before they were sort of the, "Oh, you of little faith, why do you doubt" crowd. But now it means they have faith. The kind of faith that could survive his absence. The kind of faith that he was with them always. The kind of faith that one day they would see him again. The kind of faith that changes your life and sends you out to tell other people what you've seen and what you know. Devastating disappointment had been transformed into life-changing faith. Desperate hope had been elevated into life-giving faith. But what about us? I mean, here we are this morning on Easter, 2,000 years and 6,400 miles removed from that day. And unless you had an experience worthy of a Vatican investigation or a National Enquirer cover headline, or had a vision or heard a voice and had yourself checked out and told you were okay, all I can tell you is, I've been to Jerusalem. I've seen the empty tomb, both of them. Or two, you know. And while it was a powerful experience, it's not why I have faith. In fact, it's faith that makes going there a powerful experience. So what about faith for us? I mean, where is our Galilee? Where is the place our faith is born? It's not to be missed, however. It said when they saw him, they worshipped him. But then Matthew adds, but some doubted. Why? Because faith inherently comes with a measure of doubt. Even if you've seen, even if you've met him, even if you've had a close encounter of the third kind, faith entertains doubts. It's why we call it faith. Thomas the disciple dealt with it. Remember what he said? Unless I see him for myself, I won't believe. Put my hand in the nail prints in his hands. And of course he did. And he believed. But you remember that Jesus said to him after that, "You believe because you've seen. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet still believe." But how? I mean, why would we if we haven't seen? Well, people did, and people do believe, though we haven't seen. I mean, why else is the church full today? Because people believe, though we haven't seen. Only a generation removed from the whole resurrection experience, Peter wrote in his letter to the church, "Although you've not seen Him, you love Him. And even though you don't see Him now, you believe in Him. And you rejoice with an indescribable and glorious joy, for you are receiving the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls." I mean, surely those first generation Christians who did not see based their faith strongly on the testimony of those who did see. They were people that they knew and trusted, that saw for themselves. And there is a ripple effect of their experience that passes generation from generation. And those ripples of faith down from those who saw have traveled for 2,000 years and 6,400 miles, and just now they are washing up on the shore of our lives. You could say that your faith and mine go all the way back to those first followers who saw and worshiped. But also, this faith and seeing thing works both ways. Seeing is believing. But believing is seeing. See, faith affects what we see in life and how we see life. Paul, in fact, talks about it. He prays for people in his letter that we would have the eyes of our hearts enlightened, that we may know the hope to which He called us and the power of those who believe. In other words, faith in the resurrected Christ affects how I see my circumstances. Not as hopeless, but hopeful. As redeemed in the hands of God for good, not victims at the mercy of fate or luck. Faith allows me, even though I don't see Him, to see where He's been. The risen Christ leaves an impression everywhere He goes. There is an unmistakable mark that He leaves. It is stamped upon the lives of people and situations. Just a short time after Jesus' resurrection, the disciples were transformed men. The book of Acts says some non-believers were talking about them and what they called their boldness. And it says they noted they had been with Jesus. They had not seen Jesus, but they saw these men. And they knew because of what they saw in these men, they had been with Jesus. And then there are situations where it's simply evident He has been there, where the way has been paved for us before we ever got there. We usually see it in hindsight, but without faith, we won't see it at all. It's like a hopeless Mary looking at Jesus and thinking Him the gardener, or dejected, faith-depleted disciples on the road to Emmaus walking along with Jesus and not recognizing Him. I mean, how much more is that true for us when all we have or the signs He left when He passed on ahead of us on the way back to Galilee? Without faith, we will miss it, even though the signs are all around us. Maybe more than anything, don't you think faith in the resurrected Jesus affects how I see the death of someone I love, or maybe even my own? Because of faith in the resurrection, we live with hope, even at a grave that says, "I can't wait to see you," or "I'll see you again soon." Just before my father died, knowing that his death was imminent, he asked me this question. He said,
"Do you think my daddy will meet me when I get there?" He had lost his father far too young. The question was one of hopeful anticipation and faith in the resurrected Jesus. And so he asked me, his son, the pastor, a man of faith, to reassure him. And I said to him that day the stupidest thing I've ever said to my father. And the thing I regret more than any angry adolescent back talk. I said, "I don't know. Because I don't know what heaven is like." I said, I know Jesus is there. You see, now as a much older man, nearly 20 years removed from my father's death, and a lot closer to my own, I understand his question a lot better now. And I know that all he wanted to hear, and all I want to hear, is yes. Yes. Absolutely. He'll be waiting for you. And because of Easter, we can believe that. The last thing I said before my father's last breath was, "I'll see you again soon." Because of Easter. And I can't wait to see him. And I can't wait to see Jesus. As the words of that great hymn, "It Is Well With My Soul," says, "And Lord, haste the day when my faith shall be sight, and the clouds be rolled back as a scroll, and the trump shall resound, and the Lord shall descend. Even so, it is well with my soul." You might say on that day, he will be a sight for sore eyes. And you know why? All because of Easter. Because death could not hold him. And an angel rolled back the stone. And his followers met him in Galilee and they worshipped him. And the rest is history. The history of our faith. So may the eyes of your hearts be enlightened, that you may see where he's been and know he is risen. And may we walk by faith with the anticipation of, "I can't wait to see you." If you're here today and you have doubts, know this: you are here because of faith. If not your own, at least the faith of others who love you. And the ripples of their faith are washing up even now on your shore. And if you want that faith to be your own, faith that will enable you to live with hope in every circumstance, just risk it. Claim it. Step out on it. And you will find he will meet you there. And you can do that this morning.